Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So reading from the Mahabharata chapter 4. Duryodhana begins his evil schemes, right? Because now they're back in Hastinapur, and so they're there, and the sons of Dhritarashtra are there, Duryodhana Adis, and so then naturally there'll be a rivalry, you know, one, they're you know, their children and all that, but two is that we see is that the Pandavas are the natural, they say, heir to the thrones. They are have godly qualities, so besides just having the standard Kshatriya prowess and abilities and all that, they have qualities of the demigods, because they're sons of the demigods. And so then there's naturally going to be an enmity, because it's obvious of their superiority. The Pandavas began to enjoy life in Hastinapur. They sported with 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, who became known as the Kauravas. Right? So they were known as the Kauravas, and then Pandu's sons were known as the Pandavas, even though technically they're all in the Kaurava line. But still, it was understood in this way. Pandu's sons excelled the Kauravas in all areas, in strength, knowledge, and prowess with weaponry. Bhima was especially powerful, and he took delight in defeating the Kauravas in sport. They could not equal him in anything. The exuberant Bhima possessed the indefatigable power of his divine father. At wrestling and fighting, he was unapproachable and could easily hold off the attacks of any number of Kauravas. Out of boyish sense of fun, he would often play practical jokes on them, laughing when they became angered and tried futilely to get back at him. Right? So, because they're young and all that, so then he's very powerful, he can defeat them, but he would just be playing like other boys and all that and make some fun, make some joke. And then when they get upset, any number of them would come to attack him, he could keep them away. So it was never a problem. So you can see is that all these areas, strength, knowledge, and prowess, they just were outstanding. It was just, there was no real comparison. Now, it's not that the Duryodhanas and his brothers weren't special and powerful, because they are, you know, from the line of the emperors. So compared to other kings around the world, then they would be extremely powerful. But compared to the Pandavas, they just didn't match. Duryodhana in particular found Bhima's antics and power intolerable, right? Because they're kind of similar in age. As the eldest son of the blind king, Duryodhana had enjoyed the most prestige in the Kuru house. The Kuru elders had carefully raised him and trained him in kingly arts, thinking of him as the potential future world emperor. Right, so they were dealing with it, because he is all that's there. Pandu went to the forest, and as far as everybody knows, Pandu's not going to have any children, right, because of the curse. And Vidura, then his children aren't going to sit on the throne, so that means all that's left is Dhritarashtra's. So then naturally they're thinking that they have to train him this way. So being the elder of all the brothers, he'll naturally be the king. So he's given all the attentions, all the training, all the facilities. And so naturally, you know, just in general, he gets attached to it, but him in specific, because of his particular mundane vision, then specifically he gets very attached. Mindful of the omens seen in his birth, the elders were especially careful to teach him moral codes, right? Because at the time of his birth, remember, the jackals and the vultures were making all kinds of noise. And so then, and this is not just in general noise, it was from within the temple. And so then they understood he's going to destroy the dynasty. So they wanted to teach him how to behave, what's the proper behavior, what's the proper culture. The prince was both powerful and capable in all areas of weaponry and politics, was accustomed to being the center of attention in the royal palace since his birth. Right, so he's very qualified. But we see, compared to the Pandavas, no. When the Pandavas arrived, however, all that changed. Pandu's sons were gentle, modest, and devoted to their elders, right? He's not. He's proud. You know, he's the special one, and he takes advantage of it. They soon became dear to Bhishma, Vidura, and the other senior Kurus. Their behavior was a welcome change from that of Duryodhana and his brothers, who tended to be self-centered and often quite arrogant, right? So they're thinking, we're the kings, we're the princes, so yes, we're the special ones. And yes, they are the special ones, but you expect from this high grade of Kshatriyas, you know, the emperors, that they're going to have character and all that also. Duryodhana quickly became envious of his five cousins. His envy grew up like a fire fed with oil when he saw Bhima's pranks. After another day of humiliation at Bhima's hands, Duryodhana felt he could take no more. He spoke with Dushasana, the next eldest of the 100 Kauravas. "Dear brother, this Bhima is a constant thorn in our sides. He challenges all 100 of us at once and throws us about like pieces of straw." Right? And there, as we saw, they're strong. Duryodhana is strong, but still Bhima is stronger. "We cannot better him at anything. Why, even at eating, he humbles us by consuming as much as 20 of us put together. Something has to be done to check his pride," right? So also as young men, then, you know, they like to eat and all that, and so how much you can eat. But Bhima eats as much as 20 of them, and they're probably very, very good at eating. Duryodhana's eyes narrowed as he spoke. His intentions were vicious. The prince was inclined to wicked acts, and his uncle Shakuni, who had taken up residence in Hastinapur, had spurned him on. Right, although he had shown no outward signs of his feelings, the Gandharva prince had been offended by Bhishma's decision to give his sister to the blind Dhritarashtra rather than Pandu. Now he sought revenge. He involved himself in court intrigues in order to find a way to avenge himself against Bhishma. Hurting the Pandavas, who were obviously dear to Bhishma, seemed one good way. And of course, he would simultaneously be advancing the cause of his sister's sons. Duryodhana was a willing accomplice. The prince saw his scheming uncle as a mentor. When Duryodhana had come to him complaining about Bhima, it did not take much to convince him to do something terrible to the Pandava. Right? So we see that in here, in the beginning of the Mahabharata, we'll see that Shakuni looks like he's totally against the Pandavas. And that, and then in here, then it has the thing, you know, it bothers Bhishma. But we'll see later at the end of the Mahabharata, then Krishna will reveal actually Shakuni the whole time is trying to destroy Duryodhana, right? Because that he's the one who caused so much trouble to Shakuni's family. So he knows that if a person behaves badly with someone who's pious and behaves in bad ways, it will just, their karma will catch up with them and destroy them. So he's just encouraging to do as much nonsense as possible so that he gets destroyed as soon as possible. And Duryodhana, because of that evil nature in him, he happily takes up all the schemes that is mentioned. Duryodhana revealed his plan to Dushasana. "Tomorrow I shall feed Bhima in an enormous poisoned feast. When he falls unconscious after eating, I shall bind his limbs and toss him into the Ganges. With Bhima gone, the other brothers are helpless. We can easily deal with them. Thus, my claim to the throne will be unchallenged." He doesn't understand the others are also so powerful. But because he's physically very strong, then Bhima, who's physically very strong, disturbs him. Like you can see, the things that disturb him the most are the wrestling and the eating, like that. So that stands out to him, but the others are also better than him in everything. Dushasana smiled in agreement. He too found Bhima's behavior intolerable, and like Duryodhana, He had also found his own status in the Kuru house diminished since the Pandavas' arrival. Right, so they're all getting the attention, and that because they're the only children in the house, and they're getting attention as children, and they're also getting attention as the possible inheritors of the throne. So they'll be the next kings. But their behavior is not so good, but they're the only kids there. But when the Pandavas come, you see, they're the natural heirs to the throne, and they have good behavior. So they deal properly with the elders and everything. They're not arrogant, they're humble, they have a service attitude. So then, naturally, then there's going to be that shift in that so much focus. So they're going to get their attention as princes, but they may not get the attention that will be given to the Pandavas. So whatever attention they were giving, so it's not necessarily that their attention was less, but the attention to the Pandavas was more. Right? So does that make sense? Is that you have, they're getting there a certain amount of attention because of their quality and the character that they have. Then the Pandavas come along who have better character, so they naturally get more attention. Right? So more attention naturally goes to those who have better behavior, who know the etiquette, know the duties, know how to do service and all that. So from Duryodhana's perspective, he's getting less attention, but actually there's a good chance he's getting the same attention. You see, his father still has the same affection for him. The mother has the same affection for him. Everyone's going to deal with him because he is the prince. And so, but at the same time, is the Pandavas are getting more attention in the way of glories and all that. So the Pandavas, by their coming, and then now you see what is actual standard of princes, you know, actual standard of princes in the line of the great personalities before them, you know, Kuru and all the other great personalities. So then, it's natural they'll get more attention. So it's not necessarily that Duryodhana is getting less attention, it's just that the attention that he was used to doesn't compare to the positive attention that is given to the Pandavas. And so because he can't see that he's less in character and qualities, then he's just blaming it on them. If they hadn't come, I'd be getting the full attention, rather than if I behaved better and wasn't such a nasty person, then I would get this similar treatment like the Pandavas. So Dushasana, Dushasana smiled in agreement. He put his arm around his brother, and the two of them made their way back to the palace, laughing together as they walked the forest path, right? Because they're laughing because now they have a plan and everything's going to go. That's one of the things, the demigods, then they always take shelter of the Lord when there's a problem. And the demons, then they just make a new plan, right? So, of course, you take shelter of the Lord, you make your plan, but you're dependent on the Lord for the plan to work. But for the demons, they just think their plan, their intelligence is what makes it work. The next morning, Duryodhana suggested that all the princes go to the river for some water sports. Soon they mounted their shining chariots, which resembled cities, and had great wheels that rumbled like thunderclouds as they went out, sending up clouds of dust. Upon arriving on the riverbank, the mighty youths dismounted from their cars, laughing and joking, and entered the large pleasure house that Dhritarashtra had built for them. Right, so next to the river, he had built some very nice large place, open place, you know, it's covered, but it's open, it will be open on the sides and all that, so that they can see the surroundings and that, but it just keeps them out of the sun or the rain or whatever it is like that. It has a nice place to sit, but at the same time it has the feeling of being outside and being next to the Jamuna and the forest that's around there. And it would have been quite a large one because you have to accommodate his 100 sons and the Pandavas. And it's not that they're all sitting in there like they're on a bus or something. It has to be big enough. They can run around. They can do things. They can play games. The elegant mansion was built of white marble and stood 7 stories high. Multicolored pennants flew from tall golden flagstaffs on its roof. There were dozens of rooms offering every kind of luxury. Each room was tastefully decorated with tapestries. The tapestries will be these nice, decorative claws that are embroidered that'll be on the walls. Fine paintings and ivory and coral furnishings that were studded with gems and covered with golden cushions. Right, so it's not enough that it was just made out of coral or out of ivory. Then within that, then it had jewels within it. Royal musicians and dancers stood by, ready to entertain the princes, and 100 of the king's select force of bodyguards stood ready to protect them. So a very nice arrangement we see. Once inside, Duryodhana invited everyone to enjoy the great feast he had arranged for them. He led them through the mansion and out into the central gardens. So then this mansion then also had, then it would be around, because anything that's so big and all that, it always has a courtyard. And so this courtyard then means that you could do things where you are outside, but you're still as contained within. Right? It's got its own gardens inside. The boys looked with pleasure upon the large ponds filled with red and blue lotuses and surrounded by soft grassy banks. Crystal waterfalls made tinkling sounds that blended with the singing of brightly colored exotic birds. The heady scent of numerous blossoms filled the air. Fine cushions had been arranged in lines on the grass, and many servants stood by waiting to serve the feast. Right? So again, you sit down in lines, they all sit there and everything, and then the servants come along, they serve everything. So it's very, very nice. Duryodhana chose the seat next to Bhima. He ordered the servants to bring the food. The dishes were exquisite, right? So they were really, really nice. Duryodhana had personally mixed the poison with the food he had brought to Bhima. He then offered him the plate, feigning love and feeding him with his own hand, right? Because he wants him to eat more. The guileless Bhima suspected nothing, because guileless means he's not envious and that, so he doesn't expect that anybody else is going to be bad. And he carefully consumed his normal amount, right, which is 20 times any of the brothers. Duryodhana rejoiced within as Bhima hungrily swallowed the poisoned cakes, pies, creams, drinks, and other preparations. When the feast was over, Duryodhana suggested they all go down to the river for sport. The boys raced to the river in great joy. They wrestled and rolled about on the ground, tossing each other into the clear blue water of the river. As usual, Bhima was the most energetic. The poison did not appear to have affected him. The prince, who stood head and shoulders above his peers, was a matchless wrestler. Right, so head and shoulders above the peers, both in the way of head and shoulders above means everybody else is only as high as your shoulders, right? And so your head is taller. So in that way, he's bigger. But at the same time, it also can mean the aspect of just he's so much better. So it can mean he's bigger. It can also mean he's better. Anyone who approached him quickly found themselves sailing through the air and landing in the water. Bhima would then dive in and create huge waves by thrashing his arms. The playful Bhima then dunked the other princes under the waters. Right, so when he'd flash his arm, there'd be so much big waves, they blocked themselves like that from the wave, and then he would come and then catch them and push them under the water because they weren't aware of what was going on. Late in the afternoon, the boys began to tire. They came out of the water and dressed themselves in white robes adorned with gold ornaments. Then they wearily made their way back to the mansion to spend the night. Right, so they were going down there for like it would be like princely camping out. So they have a mansion next to the water, so they would go out and all that. So it'd be some fun like that. Bhima had consumed enough poison to kill 100 men, but it was not until evening that the wind god's son began to feel its effects. As night fell, he felt so drowsy that he decided to lay down by the river and rest. Gradually, he lapsed into deep sleep. Because, see, the difficulty is if there's poison, because it just slows everything down and everything. So one of the important things is not to sleep. If someone's been poisoned, you have to keep them awake, right, until the antidote's been given and everything's clear. So because if they go to sleep, then there's a good chance they won't wake up. So you always have to keep him awake. So that's the whole idea, is he ate, then they went and wrestled and did so many things so they become very tired. Then he goes to sleep. Then he knows, okay, that's it. Bhima's finished. When the other princes had gone back to the mansion, Duryodhana saw his opportunity. He had thought that the poison had failed, but seeing Bhima finally failing unconscious, he rubbed his hands in glee, right? Because he thought, oh, he didn't get poisoned. Along with Dushasana, he bound Bhima's arms and legs with strong cords, looking furtively around, right? So they're looking to see if anybody's watching. The brothers quickly rolled the comatose prince into the river, right? So Bhima is unconscious, and so then they tie up his hands and legs and that, and then roll him into the river, right? Because one, he had the poison, he's gone to sleep, so it's starting to have its effect. You tie the arms and legs, then you put him in the water, then he can't swim and all. So they're really trying their best to make sure that Bhima is finished. Bhima sank to the bottom of the river and was carried by underwater currents. Right, because this is in the Ganga, right? There's Jamuna, it's the same river. So it will be connected to all of the different parts of the universe and everything like that. It's not like regular rivers here that just flow. The Ganga has its connection that goes all the way down. It goes from the heaven, it starts up at the top and comes all the way to the bottom of the universe, then goes back up. The celestial abode of the divine serpent beings, the Nagas, could be reached through the Ganges. And Bhima was swept along a mystical path right into their midst. Because right, he's a special person, the demigod, then he's going along this path. At once the snakes began to bite the human who had suddenly arrived among them, right? So they're there, suddenly Bhima just arrives there. So snakes, when they get surprised, then naturally they bite. Their virulent poison proved to be the antidote to the plant poison Duryodhana had administered. Right, so one poison counteracts this other poison, right? Just as fire, counteracts fire. If there's fire burning from one side, you start a fire on the other side. If it burns towards the first fire, the two fires meeting will go out. So in this way, somehow or another, the effect of the poison, of the one kind of poison, plant poison, and then the animal poison, then it balanced itself. Right, so it's not, yeah. He awoke to find himself on a strange riverbank, surrounded by large serpents bearing their fangs. Bhima burst the cords binding his limbs, right? They had tied him up, but he just ripped them apart. He was so strong. He picked up the snakes and dashed them to the ground. He pressed some into the earth with his feet and hurled others to a distance, right? So into the earth, not just that he's pressing them towards the earth, he's pressing so hard that they actually go into the ground, right? So very strong. Seeing him render dozens of snakes unconscious, the others fled away in terror. The Nagas went quickly to their king, Vasuki. With fearful voices, they said, "Lord, a human being fell amongst us, bound with cords. Perhaps he had been poisoned, for he was unconscious. When we bit him, he regained his senses and overpowered us. You should go to him at once." Vasuki assumed a human form, right? Because the Nagas, they can take a human form or they can be in their snake form. So they're just relaxing and all that, then they'll have their Naga form. But if they want to move amongst people and all that, then they'll take their human form. Vasuki assumed a human form, rose from his bejeweled throne, and walked gracefully out of his palace. Arka, a Naga chief, went with him. Arka had long ago lived upon the earth in human society. He was Kunti's great-grandfather, and he immediately recognized Bhima as his great-grandson. Smiling, he introduced himself and embraced the prince. Right, so Arka had been, moved with the humans. The human had come, so naturally then Arka would go along with the king. And then seeing Bhima, he understood that this is his great-grandson, because then granddaughter would have been Kunti and now her son. So seeing this, Vasuki was pleased and said to Arka, "What service can we render this boy? Let us give him an abundance of gems and gold." So it's that, so then he's related to Arka, who's a major person in the court, an elder in the court. And so then he said, okay, so then he's related to you. What can we do to benefit this person? And we see, he's so powerful and all that. So, he's worthy. Arka looked at the powerful Bhima and replied, "I think this prince should be best served of us if we let him partake of our rasa." Right? Because he was thinking, we'll give him gold and wealth and all that. But he's saying, no, we have this special rasa for the Nagas that they try. Let us give him that. Vasuki agreed. Bringing Bhima back to his palace, he arranged for pots of the ambrosial rasa to be brought for him. This drink was distilled from celestial herbs. By drinking even one pot, a man would become permanently endowed with the vigor and strength of 1,000 elephants. The Nagas placed a number of pots in front of Bhima and invited him to drink. Bhima sat facing the east and, as he always did before eating or drinking, offered prayers to the Lord, right? Because he's a devotee, so it's by the Lord's grace he gets things. He then lifted one of the large pots of rasa and quaffed it down in one gulp. Right, so it's a big pot, and you know, mostly people probably have to sip at it for a while. He just in one gulp just drank the whole thing. The Nagas watched in silent amazement as Bhima drank 8 pots of the divine elixir, each in a single draft. Even the most powerful among them would not have been capable of such a feat, right? Because it's a big pot, and how could he take so much? Like we saw before, is that he can eat 20 of what the Kaurava Kshatriya princes could eat, and Kshatriyas are big, they're powerful, they can eat a lot. After Bhima had satisfied himself with the rasa, he again felt drowsy. Vasuki offered him a large silk-covered bed, and the prince laid down. He remained in deep sleep for 8 days as his body assimilated the rasa, right? So it appears that one day for one pot. So he drank 8 pots. So then for 8 days, he just slept the whole time. So his body assimilated. Because then after that, the pots themselves will give him the strength of 8,000 or so elephants, right? So, but we see as he already was so powerful. So his strength was that of 10,000. Right? On the 9th day, he awoke feeling strong beyond measure. The Nagas told him that the rasa had given him the strength of 10,000 elephants. He would now be invincible in battle, right? So that's why Arka told him, better to give him that. They're Kshatriyas like that. Wealth they'll get at this kind of strength. How often do you get that opportunity to get the strength of the Nagas? Vasu told Bhima to bathe in the nearby sacred waters of the Mandakini, then dress himself in the robes of the Naga king had brought for him. So the Mandakini is another name of the Ganges. So when she's in one area of the universe, she's known by Mandakini. When she's in another area, she's a Ganges. When she's in another area, she has... So there's 3 different names, depending on whether she's in the heavenly, whether Earth, or the lower planets. He should then quickly return to his home, as his kinfolk were in much anxiety about him. After he had bathed, right, because he disappeared, and for 8 days, no one knows what happened. All they know is he ate, he went to sleep in the river, and then he disappeared. You know, and probably during those 8 days, Duryodhan is very happy. After he had bathed and eaten the celestial foods the Nagas provided, so now after this, then he dresses, he bathes, he dresses nicely, then they feed him a nice meal. Bhima, dressed in white silks and gold ornaments, was led to the river. They entered with Bhima and within moments brought him out of the river water near the place where he'd been pushed in, right? So being Nagas and being celestials, then they could go into the water there and move through the Ganges at will. Only great yogis can do that kind of thing. They can dip down in one part of the Ganga and come up in another. So the Nagas were able to do this by their natural mystic powers. Filled with wonder, Bhima ran back to Hastinapur, right? Because he had gone into the river, ended up with the Nagas. Then now they went back into the river, and now he's back where he was. And so he was filled with wonder. In the city, Kuntisara's sons arrived back without Bhima, so this would have been before. The other princes were surprised that he was not already there, right? Because they thought he had disappeared. He's just so strong. Everybody else was tired. He probably just went back to the palace, is what they're thinking. They had assumed he must have gone ahead without them. Duryodhana and Dushasana feigned concern, but secretly they rejoiced, thinking Bhima to be dead. The virtuous-minded Yudhishthira believed that others were as honest as him, right? So he always thought everybody was correct. Suspecting nothing, he told his mother, "We searched for Bhima in the gardens and mansion for a long time. We went into the woods and called out for him. Finally, we concluded he must have already left." Yudhishthira became fearful. Perhaps Bhima had been killed. Kunti shared his fears, and she asked him again to go to the mansion with his brothers and search for the missing Bhima. When her sons left, she summoned Vidura and said, "Wise one, I am afraid for Bhima's safety. He did not return with the others. I often see an evil look in Duryodhana's eye. I know he is filled with malice towards Bhima. Perhaps he was killed by him. Kunti hoped Vidura would give her solace. His words were always deeply considered and comforting. Vidura did not disappoint her. He replied, "Do not think in this way, gentle lady. The great Rishi Vyasadeva foretold that your sons will be long-lived. His words can never be false, nor indeed can those of the gods who have predicted a great future for all your sons." Remember, when they're born, then the omens that were there, the voice spoke about how great they were and all that. They've gotten blessings. The demigods came and gave their blessings. So everything's going to be wonderful for them. But even though everything's so nice and they're protected by the Lord, doesn't mean that there's not going to be situations that externally appear unfortunate, that you see is by the devotees through these unfortunate situations. It always comes out very nice. It always comes out very good. Still, you know, so that he's speaking that because that's proper behavior. Always supposed to encourage in that. Like that. Still, Vidura remembered the omens surrounding Duryodhana's birth, right? So he was talking about all the nice things about the Pandavas, but at the same time he also remembers about Duryodhana. He warned Kunti to be on her guard. The evil-minded prince might try anything. Right? So we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.